Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts.
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who.
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not.
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcast. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
All right, now, thank you for tuning in to the GSMC Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, Tate, and I have been out a little while taking care of some personal business, and so I haven't been on the air for a little bit. But I wanted to come on because to talk about the UFC 225 card that happened a couple of weeks ago, because it's kind of the card that just keeps on giving back. Today I'm going to talk about that card and kind of the ramifications of what has kind of transpired after this event. When you're looking at this card, initially the first thing you go with is, in my opinion, this was absolutely the best card of the year. Action-packed, fun fights, a lot of surprises. Some shaky judges in Chicago. But the big shocker for me has been what has been going on with the UFC and their pay-per-view numbers lately. And the big shocker is that when you look at UFC 224 and UFC 225, total buys between the two of those are under 250,000 buys, and that's really bad. And I don't know what's going on, but it seems like that it's not, don't seem like about it, that more and more of these pay-per-view events are just not selling. And I've heard a number of people talk about this, and one of the big questions that come out is, are there too many UFC events? And that could be part of it, but I don't think it is. I think the big issue is that I think the UFC needs to revamp the way they're promoting fighters. I feel like the last couple years, they put so much effort into bolstering the Conor McGregors, the Ronda Rouseys, the Misha Tates, and have gone away from promoting the brand and promoting a lot of their younger fighters. And now that, you know, Conor hasn't been around, hasn't really fought in a little while, Misha Tate has retired, Ronda Rousey has retired, that you're looking around at a situation where you have this action-packed card, the best card of the year, and I believe the numbers were right about 150,000 buys, under 200,000 buys total. And that is just, a card like this should be 750,000 buys, closer to 1 million buys, or at least 500,000 buys. But they're not even getting that. They're not even getting to 250,000 buys with two pay-per-view events. And that's not good for the UFC. And you look at this big deal with ESPN, and this is coming at the right time. Because of the fact that I think being on ESPN is going to get the UFC in front of a lot more eyes and a lot more views. A lot of SportsCenter anchors, a lot of the ESPN anchors will cover the UFC more, which will kind of bolster the numbers because it is coming at a time where the UFC needs help. I remember talking about how the UFC was the fastest growing sport in the world, and it is still growing, but the pay-per-view numbers are shrinking, and they're shrinking fast. When you're looking at a card that just gave one amazing fight after another one, and the first fight on this card that I'm going to talk about Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero. And I know this happened a couple of weeks ago, so I'm not going to go into too much detail, but it was Robert Whittaker ended up with a split decision win, and I didn't agree with it. I thought Yoel clearly won the fight. I had Robert Whittaker winning rounds 1 and 2. I had Yoel clearly winning 3, eking out a round 4, winning that round, and then I gave him a 10-8 round in round 5. And I was surprised that the judges didn't give Yoel a 10-8 for round 5. With the new scoring, there's supposed to be a lot more 10-8 rounds, even some 10-7 rounds. And in Chicago, they didn't give him a 10-8 round. And with the new scoring, it's supposed to be more 10-8 rounds. If that wasn't a 10-8 round, what is? And so that's when I scored it, I had it a clear victory for Yoel Romero. But the main reason for talking about this and talking about the 225 card is to talk about the ramifications for this event here. Because of the fact that Yoel Romero, one, did not win the title because the title was not up, Yoel missed weight. And there's some talk that Yoel may actually sue the Illinois Athletic Commission because he didn't make weight. And the situation behind that is Yoel weighed in and he was 2 pounds over. And they gave him 2 hours to lose that weight, and which is standard. You're allowed a second weigh in. He went in, decided to take a little rest, a little nap, before getting back to losing the weight. A judge came in an hour into it, right after he's getting done with his rest, and tells him, "No, you have to weigh in now. We're ending this." So I understand where Yoel would be very upset about this, where he's told that he gets 2 hours to lose weight. He takes his time to get himself together before he goes back to losing weight. And then they come back and they change it and say, "No, you have to weigh in now." And he ends up missing weight by 0.2 pounds, which means if they would have even given him a half an hour, he would have lost that 0.2 pounds and it would have been for the title. So I can understand why Yoel is looking at this as a possibly actually suing the Athletic Commission because of this. I think he should, because in defense of the Athletic Commission, they're trying to err on the side of caution. But if you're giving the guy 2 hours to lose the weight, he should have been given that full 2 hours to lose the weight. So, and then other ramifications from this fight, with Robert Whittaker keeping the title, it looks like it's going to be either Chris Weidman Gastelum, who's going to be actually up for the title and actually going to be the next person that's going to be fighting for the middleweight title. But it looks like Yoel Romero, one of the things that have been brought up with Yoel is the fact that, one, is do you do a rematch with Robert Whittaker? And it looks like that is off the table. They're not going to do another rematch. And what they're looking at is a possibility where Yoel Romero moves up to light heavyweight and actually fights Alexander Gustafsson for like an interim title because of the fact that Daniel Cormier is actually fighting next week or two He's going to be fighting Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight title. And with the fact that originally they were looking at Gustafsson fighting Luke Rockhold. Luke Rockhold is out with an injury. And now it looks like they are really pushing for that Yoel Romero, Alexander Gustafsson fight. When they asked Gustafsson what did he think about that as a fight, he was on board. Looks like Dana White is on board with that one. So that could be your next big fight that is going to be coming up with Yoel Romero. Now, the next fight we're going to talk about is the welterweight interim title fight between Rafael Dos Santos and Colby Covington. And this fight was a bit of a shocker for me. I thought Colby just took it to RDA. I thought he took it to him. I thought RDA was not prepared for the pressure that Colby Covington had put on him, and he had no answer. The scorecard had it closer than I thought it should have been. I thought it was a blowout. It was constant pressure, constant, you know. He was on Rafael Dos Santos. Dos Santos never had any room to do anything. He outworked him. He with more effort, more pace, more power, and he just smothered him. And I would say I'm not the biggest Colby Covington fan, but this is one thing that I think a lot of fighters in the UFC need to take note. He is now the interim welterweight champion. And in my opinion, he's a very good fighter, but he got this opportunity, I think, a lot sooner than he would have normally gotten it because of his mouth, because he can talk a good game. And he also proved he can back it up. Which, you know, if you're going to talk a big game like Conor McGregor or Colby Covington, you have to back it up. And he did just that. He took it to RDA. He smothered him, and he just really took him out. And now you're looking at a situation where the current champ, Tyron Woodley, who is coming off of a shoulder injury, is going to be defending his title. It'll be champ versus champ, but it's really, you know, Woodley's title against Colby Covington. And I'm telling you right now, there is a lot of words being said between these two guys, and it concerns me about Tyron Woodley. I'm a little more concerned about Tyron Woodley than I'd say most people are. And the reason why this is because I look at this as a Conor McGregor effect. Jose Aldo against Conor McGregor. Conor got Jose Aldo out of his normal game, out of his normal mental preparation for the fight. And it really affected him, and he ended up getting blown out. Well, it's starting to seem similar to this with Tyron Woodley. Tyron Woodley is talking a lot more than he normally would. He's very, very animated about Colby Covington, and he really wants to smash him. And instead of him being, it concerns me when you start looking at the way Tyron Woodley wins a lot of his games. He's that cerebral assassin, more of a, I'm going to win by using my brain first. You know, when you look at him in fighting Wonder Boy, he has the power, he has the wrestling skill. But what he did was he may fought a boring fight, but he fought a super smart fight. And so when you look at that, when you get caught up into all the hype and all the talk that Colby Covington is doing, it can truly take you out of your game. And if Tyron Woodley was doing what he normally does, which thinks things through very calm, I would be personally taking Tyron Woodley in a pretty easy win. because I when I look at Woodley, he has the power. He packs a punch that he can put you out with one punch. It's quick burst of energy, super smart in the ring, and then on as far as wrestling goes, world class wrestling skills, which I give him the edge on wrestling skill. I give him the edge on power. And traditionally, I would give Tyron Woodley the edge as far as putting together a better game plan. But the way he's acting right now, he could be falling for a trap that Colby Covington is putting out there, because he's getting really caught up into all the things that he is saying. Now, I'm going to move on from here because, like I said, this is going to be a quick episode here. I wanted just to touch base on the UFC 224. I'm going to talk about the fight that surprised me the absolute most. And that fight was Holly Holm versus Megan Anderson. When we come back, we're going to talk about Holly Holm and that Megan Anderson fight. We're also going to talk about CM Punk. And we're going to talk about some more of the fights on this card. Stay tuned, and we will be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the Extreme Cage Fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, we're back. And this episode, we're talking about kind of like the fallout from UFC 225 and kind of what has happened after this fight, after this pay-per-view event. We talked about the poor pay-per-view numbers. We talked about the main event and what's going to happen next with Yoel Romero. We talked a little bit about Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley. But the fight that I was actually kind of excited for, that I know a lot of people weren't expecting, or maybe didn't know a lot about, was that Holly Holm versus Megan Anderson fight. And I've been a big follower of Megan Anderson and Holly Holm. So they're two of my favorite fighters in the women's division. And I was very interested to see how Holly would handle the size of Megan Anderson. Megan Anderson is a very tall, big, solid woman. She stands 6 foot tall. She walks around about 270, 275 pounds. And she's a devastating striker, heavy handed. And I was very curious to see how Holly would handle someone that was going to come in and put a lot of pressure on her and be big and strong enough to really be a threat. Someone that could be as big, if not bigger, than Cyborg. And so I was very curious to how Holly was going to handle things. If she went in there and she was cautious, kind of like she was with Cyborg, I thought this was going to be a problem for her. And when this fight first took off, I'm watching this, and initially, right out the gate, Megan Anderson is putting pressure on Holly, and she's throwing a couple of really big shots. And I was thinking, man, this could be a problem for Holly. And Holly did something that I was so surprised on. She switched her game up. Holly, who is a world-class striker, world champion boxer, became a grappler. She She did a lot of dirty boxing. She did a lot of, she took Megan Anderson down, which then totally, when you take a bigger, taller fighter down and put them on their back, that negates their strength and their size. And Holly knew that. And she really put together a perfect game plan to actually take out and make a very dangerous fighter, make it a very easy night for her. With that being said, what's next for Holly Holm? With Holly winning a unanimous decision over Megan Anderson, what does that do for these two fighters? Well, first I'm going to talk about Megan. The big talk was that Megan versus Cyborg was going to be the big fight, and that's the fight I really wanted to see. But I think this loss to Holly was actually a blessing in disguise for Megan. Megan, anyone that's followed Megan, they know she's very big, strong, and powerful. Powerful kicks, powerful strikes. But kind of like Francis Ngannou, Megan got exposed where her weakness has always been on the ground. When she first fought in Invicta, she lost to Cindy Danbois. And kind of the same situation where she kept getting taken down and her size and strength kind of got negated. Same here with Holly Holm. Megan is going to, because of this loss, Megan is forced to go back to the drawing board and work on her ground game, work on her takedown defense. With her being so tall and lanky, she's an easy target for that takedown. And so I'm very curious to see what's her next move on how she plans to get better. After she lost to Cindy Danbois, she actually moved to the U.S. She started training out of Missouri and really wanted to become a much better fighter and train in the U.S. to become the force that she has become. Now she has to go back and she has to work on her ground game, because if she does not work on her ground game, will happen again. There's a lot of fighters out there that have seen these two fights that she's lost and know the key to beating Megan is to take her down. Now let's move on to Holly Holm. With this being Holly Holm's, in my opinion, most impressive win of all. I even think it's a more impressive win than even her Ronda Rousey win. Ruled that out and just said it's her most impressive win since the Ronda Rousey knockout. It puts her back in a really good place where they asked her after the fight, what does she want next? And she says she wants them both. She wants Cyborg and the strawweight title, but she also wants her bantamweight title back. And as I watch things develop, it looks like the next thing that's going to happen is that Holly Holm is going to actually be fighting Amanda Nunes. I think the UFC is going to set up a Holly Holm versus Amanda Nunes fight, which would be a big pay-per-view event, and then the winner of that will end up getting Cyborg. I look at that as the next big move for Holly Holm. I was super impressed with her. She showed a side of her game that she had never shown before, that she has great takedown, ability to take someone, a fighter down, something that she never did with Cyborg, and that she could grind out a gritty win. I think this is going to really help Holly Holm out as far as with her confidence when her ground game as well. This is not going to be the last time you see Holly end up going for a takedown, where when she fought Miesa Tate, that was the last place in the world she wanted to be, because she just didn't have the confidence and it actually cost her. This time it actually turned out that, you know, she's improved upon that. She has it in in-ring experience now. She's added another aspect to her game that's going to come out. And I think, you know, I think if this whole takedown ground game, I think would have really helped her out a lot against Cyborg, and I'm very curious to see how it happens if they fight again, what will happen next. Now, I want to talk about a fight that actually took place where CM Punk versus Michael Jackson took place. And or Mike Jackson, call him Mike Jackson. Okay. First off, this was the worst fight I've ever seen in all of mixed martial arts. And I'm not just talking about UFC. I'm saying it's the worst fight I've ever seen in Bellator, ONE Championship, Ryzen, Legacy, Titan FC. There's local shows that I've been to where there were better, more prepared fighters in the ring. This did not look like a UFC event. It didn't even feel like an amateur event. Mike Jackson came in super cocky, and he had all these moves that he was doing, like as he's dancing in the ring, that didn't really, you know, get him a lot of cheers from the fans. So he came in and he was super cocky. He went in and he fought CM Punk, and CM Punk, after 2 years of training MMA, it really seemed like he had just started yesterday. It was when you look at his striking, when he was throwing punches, they said, and during the fight, that he was improving, and he was trying to get his ground game. CM Punk looked like he had never fought before. There was one point where he tries to put a guillotine in, and there was no reason to even attempt it. He couldn't get it. There was no reason to even attempt this guillotine, and he was just hanging off of Mike Jackson. It was the most, it was just shameful fight I'd ever seen in any mixed martial arts organization, and that includes small local shows. Neither one of these fighters should have been in the ring. Mike Jackson ended up toying with him with CM Punk. It made it look like, at one point, it made it look like Mike Jackson was paid to like carry CM Punk to the end of the fight. He wasn't paid. It just saying it looked like that. In the end, Dana White was very upset with Mike Jackson because of all the playing that he was doing. But the outcome of this is that CM Punk will never step in a UFC ring again. And you say, what is next for CM Punk? And I say, he's put himself in a bad place, because CM Punk is not good enough to be a Bellator fighter. He's not good enough to fight at Legacy. He's not good enough to fight at Titan FC. He's just not good enough to fight at any organization. He's an older fighter who never developed into, he's not a fighter. He trained for 2 years, but he did not show any aptitude to be a fighter. And with the situation that he's done between him and the WWE, his WWE career is over. Matter of fact, there was a lawsuit that I believe he won. But his relationship, he's burned that bridge with the WWE. He's kind of burnt that bridge with the UFC. He didn't burn it, just pure lack of ability. So the only thing left for CM Punk to do is to retire. And I'm a CM Punk fan. I would like to see him retire. He just doesn't have it. And he's only just going to get himself hurt even more. It's actually dangerous to have CM Punk in the ring. I think any athletic commission that puts him in there against any professional fighter should anytime he tries to get a fight with a professional fighter, it shouldn't happen. He is as amateur can be. And I don't tend to like to bash fighters, because I respect what they've done. I was an amateur fighter. I tried fighting for a few years when I was in college. It's a tough game. But CM Punk does not, he's, you can tell that at his age, he had never done combat sports. You know, you look at the way he throws kicks, the way he throws punches. It is very, very below average. And when you look at Mike Jackson, they talk about him at a high level striking. He wasn't a very high level striker. When you look at some of the, even some boxers or even some of the UFC fighters, he's an average striker at best. And you know, CM Punk could not handle a average striker who was an 0-1 fighter who didn't even I don't think he belongs in Bellator or any of those organizations as well. And he couldn't handle that. I think it's time for him to kind of give it up. And speaking of giving it up, Rashad Evans actually fought on this card, and he ended up losing by a devastating knockout. And Rashad Evans, who has had a fantastic career, former UFC light heavyweight champion, it's time for him to give it up as well. I hate to tell a fighter that's been so great that it's time, but it's one of those things where I would like to see him give it up just because I don't want to see him tarnish his legacy or get hurt. It comes a time when a fighter, you know, it gets to that point where they just, you know, bad luck or the fight gods are not on his side any longer. And I think it's that time where he's fighting guys that are using him as a stepping stone to move up. And Rashad Evans' legacy, he's a Hall of Famer, should not be considered a guy that this is who I want to make. This is who we're going to put him in against so he can start building a young fighter's name. But that's kind of where Rashad Evans has gone to. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple other fights. We're going to talk about that Claudia Gadelha versus Carla Esparza fight. We're going to talk about the Alistair Overeem fight as well. So stay tuned, and we will be right back.
This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA, it's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
All right, we're back. And we just finished talking about that Megan Anderson-Holly Holm fight. And then we also talked about the CM Punk fight as well and against Mike Jackson. And now we're going to talk about that Alistair Overeem versus Curtis Blaydes. And I was very curious about this fight. I thought this was a good fight to get Alistair back on track after coming off of a devastating knockout that he received by the hands of Francis Ngannou. I thought this was going to be a fight that would be a challenging fight, but I thought it would be a fight that Alistair could handle. Now, Curtis Blaydes, who has been on a pretty much a tear, coming off of a 4-fight winning streak. Actually, it was a 4-fight winning streak with a no contest in there. But he was coming off a 4-fight winning streak, and after this big third round knockout of Alistair Overeem, making it now 5 straight wins in a row. The only loss that he has is his first UFC bout, where he lost to Francis Ngannou. This guy has come a long way. And I tell you what, the Francis Ngannou loss to Curtis Blaydes, that I feel like actually changed the fighter that he is today. I think it made him a much stronger fighter. He really filled in a lot of his gaps, and it showed against Alistair. Alistair was trying to put up a really good fight. It was very competitive, but in the end, Alistair was on the ground, and Curtis Blaydes landed some vicious elbows that really busted up Alistair Overeem and ended up stopping him in the third. With this being said, what's next for these two fighters? With Alistair coming off of two devastating stoppages from Francis Ngannou and now to Curtis Blaydes, I think Alistair has to take a step back, and the smart thing is to rest up, get his head right, and make a smart decision on where he goes next. I don't think that Alistair needs to jump in the ring right away with a top five contender. I think he kind of needs to get his bearings, especially coming off of two losses. I think a little safer fight would be the best decision for Alistair, I think. But Curtis, in this situation, you have a situation where Curtis is he's on the outside looking in as far as looking at a title shot. But coming off this win here, looking at possibly maybe a rematch with Francis Ngannou, or a fight like that, I think would be a really good place for him. The sky's the limit. This guy is young, he's powerful, and he is dangerous. I am definitely looking forward to seeing what happens to him. He's literally is two fights from getting a title shot. I think his next fight, whoever he fights next, I personally think I would like to see a rematch between him and Francis Ngannou. I think he gave Francis Ngannou one of his toughest fights, so I would love to see that fight next. But after that, I think he's right in line, you know, by early 2019 for a possible title shot, which would be very interesting, which you got to figure out what's going to happen with between Stipe and Daniel Cormier, and if Daniel's going to stick around. We'll talk more about that in the next episode. Now, but we're going to move on, and we're going to wrap things up with a fight that I was very surprised on, and that was Carla Esparza versus Claudia Gadelha. You have Claudia Gadelha, who has been a title contender, who's given Joanna Jędrzejczyk two of her toughest fights, against Carla Esparza, who was the initial strawweight champion. And you look around and you have these two together. This fight was supposed to happen back when they were both in Invicta. And I thought personally that Claudia Gadelha would just be a little too much for Carla Esparza. And I was wrong. Carla Esparza came out there and they went to work. And Carla really rocked Claudia Gadelha. I mean, really rocked her hard. And Claudia had the good sense of mind to take Carla Esparza down to kind of save herself. But she was really, really rocked in the first round. And that's the round that really determined how this fight went. If you gave that round to Carla Esparza, then you think she won the fight. If you still gave that round one to Claudia Gadelha, then you pretty much think she won. It was a split decision, and Claudia Gadelha won. But since then, Carla Esparza is not letting it go. She has been upset. She's called Claudia Gadelha a cheat. She said that she greased herself up for the fight so that she would be extra slippery. She didn't know how to file a complaint. She thought about going to the referee, but she's a cheat and that she feels like she won the fight and she wants to fight her again. Which is interesting there. I don't know if, you know, I'm not going to say Carla is wrong or that she's right as far as if she felt the fighter was greasy. Sometimes a fighter comes in a little, you know, they work out and before they get loosened up, they get a sweat going, a lathering before the fight, and that could be what's going on. Carla says no, that's not the case, that she had grease on her, which makes it harder for someone to grab her, which Carla Esparza is traditionally a wrestler, a grappler. But in this particular fight, which you expect Carla to be a tough wrestler, she was able to throw hands with Claudia Gadelha and actually rocked her, nailed her quite a few times. I would, with both of these fighters, with the fight, the fact that it looks like Rose Namajunas' title, her future, you know, dance card is going to be filled up between Joanna Jędrzejczyk and a few others. These two fighters, I think, should fight again. I would love to see it. The fight was close enough that you could actually see either one of them being winning this fight. The other fighter I was talking about is Joanna Jędrzejczyk and I cannot think of her name right off the top of my head right now. What is her name? That is Jessica Andrade. I had to look that up real quick. I went brain dead for a second there. It looks like I think Rose Namajunas is going to end up fighting Jessica Andrade next, or possibly a third fight with Joanna Jędrzejczyk. But I think Jessica Andrade is the person that's going to get the next fight. These two fighters don't really have, they're both right there in the title picture, just back a little ways. I think a rematch between these two would be just in order, especially with so much bad blood and Carla Esparza is not letting this go. So I'm hoping that that this fight will actually come back again and they'll run this one back. With that, that concludes this episode of kind of going back through and recapping the UFC 225 card. I just want to jump on here. We will be having more episodes on a more regular basis. I had some, like I said, some personal things that have been going on, which has had me out of the picture for the last month or so. But we will start coming back on here on a more regular basis. So stay tuned. And we will have a lot more news, notes about the UFC and the MMA world. And for that, to all, have a good night.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.